listen to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 by Island, Waiheke's stockist of the most eclectic collection of local gifts, art and clothing. You'll find them at Ocean View Road, Onirua. Last Saturday, Jan Scott spoke to David Basham from the Waiheke Island Support and Homes Trust, Hauraki Gulf Islands Councillor Denise Roach, Di Stoddard from the Waiheke Library, the organiser of Words on a Small Island Literary Festival, Geraldine O'Sullivan Bear, Sally Lumsden from Community Gardens, Kathy Carroll and Tanya Batt, both organising fundraisers to support victims of the Samoan tsunami.
Now, it's my very great pleasure to introduce David Basham, who is involved with the Waiheke Island Supportive Homes Trust, or the WISH Trust. And he's going to tell us a little bit about how the Mental Health Awareness Week has been going. It finishes tomorrow, I believe, David.
Yes, good morning, Jan. Yes, it finishes tomorrow. At this stage, I'm not sure just how successful it's been. It takes a little while to find out just how well the activities went. But certainly on the island, every year we are able to have more publicity. We've got two articles. One's come out. One's due to come out. The local peer support group, they're having a meeting today and a barbecue if the weather holds. I think they have a rain date, but that's in the Gulf News.
Oh, that's great. Whereabouts are they doing that?
Down at Little Onirua.
Excellent. Tell us something about the WISH Trust.
The WISH Trust is a 10-bed recovery rehabilitation service. It was founded in 1991 by a group of people who believed that it was important that people have choice. In those days, the institutions like King's Seat were closing. The hospital board had a property over here. And a number of people got together and founded the early part of WISH Trust. And that was a steering committee that set up the place. And it was run then directly through the Auckland Hospital Board. The WISH Trust was formed in 1992. And then the WISH Trust actually took over from the Auckland Hospital Board. And it's run under a contract from them.
Do you have anything to do with the Health Trust?
Other than we use their medical services. We have very close contact with their GP. Their GPs are enormously helpful to us and very understanding regarding mental health. And that's mainly the contact we have with them.
And how are people referred to you?
They are referred through the Taylor Centre, which is the community mental health service for Auckland City that is under the Auckland Hospital Board.
Right. So you don't have an emergency scenario if somebody has a problem with it or is worried about a family member that they might need some help?
No. Unfortunately, we're not that kind of community service. I believe there certainly isn't a need for that. There certainly is a need for a respite service. There's need for more community service on a peer support level rather than on a clinical level. But it's the same story like everywhere. It's money.
Yeah, that's the problem, isn't it? Are your residents long-term or are they there for a short-term generally?
Hopefully they can be of a short duration, maybe 2 to 3 years. But mental health has changed quite a lot in New Zealand. We started off having places like WISH, which were homes for life. In other words, people never left there. And that may be good for some people, but it was found not to be good for others because in the institutions, everything was virtually done for them. So no one knew really what skills they have. And it's really surprising to find out how skillful they really are. So that's changed now. And the concept is to get people as ready as you can to lead an independent life. Now, that may be out in the community, or that may be with WISH, or other organisations like WISH, but it's to get people to be as independent as possible.
How does the community in-house work? I mean, do you have a roster system, people take charge of cleaning and cooking and all that sort of thing?
We do that. It's like a flat. Mm-hmm. People do their own cooking. We're not a great believer at WISH, unlike other organisations, of group cooking. We find group cooking just takes away people's skills, and it's not the reality really that happens in a flatting situation usually. So people do their own cooking. They're given their money to buy parts of their menu. They plan their menu. They're given money to buy the main part of that menu, whether it be meat, fish, chicken. We provide all the rest, and they cook according to the menu they've designed, some with some supervision of the staff, some without.
And what about activities? Do you have activities where they can learn skills?
Yeah, sure. We try to use the community as much as possible, because that's the reality. When we're looking at doing activities, I like to think, what would I be doing out in the community? How would I be accessing it? In WISH, we have ourselves. We have an art group, which has last year had its own exhibition. We have guitar lessons. We also have our own version of Weight Watchers, to varying success, and we all know what it's like to try and lose weight. It's never easy, especially when you've got medication. That really makes it hard. Then we use the community services. We are, I'm told, the best customer for the night schools here. We send lots of our clients to that for computing, maths, art, gardening. And we have a very, very, very productive garden. So we have lots of activities. We make good use of the RSA. We make good use of Care and Craft. We always try and use what's in the community, because that gives people a chance to react to the community, and also it gives the community time to deal with people.
And do you help the people find jobs?
We have a person who is trained as a vocational support worker. Unfortunately, the change down at the tip, or the transfer station as it seems to be called, that change there has had a problem for at least one of our residents. He no longer has a job there. And that's very, very important. Mm. We've got somebody else who works at the SPCA, and we look for jobs, but they've got to be jobs that suit, and they've got to be a job where both the employer and the employee can fit in. So what we would do with our vocational support worker would work with them, and for perhaps the first week or more, to get them settled in there. And it could be just a few hours part-time job.
Do you use volunteers?
We haven't used volunteers as yet. Just in March, we changed from having some older people at our service to mainly having young people. And that's a whole new dynamic. So we've just had 6 months of that, and that those 6 months have been a real growing process for the residents and the staff. Now we're looking at what can we do with volunteers.
Right. So if anybody is interested in helping out with the WISH Trust, how do they contact you?
They can ring me on 7925.
372-7925?
Any day of the week, and I'm really happy. I've got some ideas. A lot of people want to play games, board games, chess, all those kind of things, and that's quite hard to get opponents to play at the various levels. But if we had someone who'd like to do that, I think it's very, very helpful.
That would be great. Mm. So anybody out there who's wanting to get involved with the WISH Trust, please get in touch with David.
Mm.
And is there anything else that you need from the community?
We've been very, very fortunate with the community. I often get people volunteering to help with the gardens and in the donation of plants. We're reviewing all the trees at present at WISH. We've got a lot of trees, some very old, some in danger of coming down, and we've got someone who's volunteered to come in and have a look at that. So I try and access people as I can, but it doesn't mean that when we need something that needs doing, we don't pay for it, because we do. We employ tradesmen, plumbers, carpenters, painters. We do that. We don't always look for something for nothing.
No, that's fair enough. But as we said before, you know, your sort of organisation is reliant on donations as well as government funding.
Government funding, but it's never quite enough. I think in the last 9 years had a 1.04% increase.
Wow.
Yeah, and no one could live on that, because every time power goes up, food goes up, transport goes up, phone goes up, ours go up too. We have just the same outgoings as a household.
Do you get any rate relief from the
council? Yes, we do. Yeah, we have substantial rate relief from the council.
Oh,
that is absolutely wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a wonderful thing too. The council access training programs for us with the university, with ACE training that does for the computers, and we get those at a cut rate. The council actually sources those for us. So the council is exceedingly supportive of places like Wish.
That's great. So I just thought that perhaps if somebody's upgrading their computer and instead of sending the old one to the dump,
We have brand new computers.
Oh, wonderful.
We're very lucky. We have three for the staff and one for the residents. That's their own computer onto the net by broadband, such as it is on slow band, probably on Waiheke. But that's there for them. We've got access to people who will donate time to teach people, and so we are very fortunate. We've had money. We got money in the times when it was a little better, and we got donations and grants, so we've upgraded our computer systems completely.
Yeah. That's great.
And there's a wonderful another place which we go to which will upgrade our software for virtually nothing, and they're a wonderful source for us.
Well, that's excellent. Mm. Well, it's a good cause to support, David. And your contact phone number again, in case there's anybody out there who'd like
that's
to get involved.
That's 7925.
372-7925 for David Basham at the Wish Trust. Thank you, David.
My pleasure, Jen.
It is now my pleasure to introduce Denise Roach. Well, she probably doesn't need any introduction, really. But she's going to talk to us about the public meeting that's on tomorrow at 2 o'clock in the Ostend Hall to talk about the possibility of getting a Gulf Island seat on the new Auckland Super City Council. Welcome, Denise.
Good morning, Jan.
Now, what form is this meeting going to take?
Well, hopefully I'm hoping that various people and everybody will turn up with their own views on what we should be doing about the ward and how Waiheke fits into the super city. We know, and we have it in legislation, and it's the result of so much, so many submissions from Waihekeans particularly, that we've got our own local board when the super city comes into force in a year's time. So we can all give ourselves a massive pat on the back for that. But where we're up to now in terms of the process towards the super city is the local government commission has to determine where we fit in terms of a councillor on that super city. The legislation says there's only 20 councillors across the entire region, representing 1.4 million people. So I, myself and the community board actually have the opportunity to give some information to the local government commission before they put out a draft proposal. So that's what this meeting's for. I want to hear what everybody thinks, really. And there will be diverse views. There always are.
Absolutely. Waiheke is renowned for that.
It's what makes it a fabulous place.
Yeah, indeed. Who's going to chair it?
Or me.
You are?
Yep.
Right, okay. And is it just sort of an open forum, or is there going to be some sort of structure to it?
Open forum, I thought, at this stage. What I'll do is I'll just start off by outlining what other organisations have put up in terms of award structure. That includes the political parties within council, so City Vision and Citizens and Ratepayers, and also the ARC's proposal. And then it's basically open forum. I basically need to hear from people. We've got a range of views floating around in terms of having our own councillor, and if that's sort of the majority sort of opinion, then we need to look at some ways to manage that, because it's pretty unlikely given our population base in the Hauraki Gulf.
So this councillor that we're pushing for, would that also include the Great Barrier, as your position does now?
If Great Barrier have actually said publicly they don't want to be in a ward with Waiheke, it's not about not liking us, although I think the Thames Coromandel proposal sort of drove them nuts, frankly, and it did create something antipathy there, but basically they believe they're in a better position economically to align themselves with the CBD, and there's some merit in that. So what Great Barrier have said is that they're not really that interested in having a Hauraki Gulf Islands wards, which puts us in an even weaker position.
So realistically, what are our chances?
Realistically, snowball's chance in hell, frankly. But there's the other alternatives that are being progressed throughout the community, like the UNESCO Biosphere Reserve. And I think, really, that's something that we could be pursuing a lot more actively, and we should be doing that too, as it does sort of, from what I understand from the research that Colin Bearden and that group have been doing, it does offer a lot more autonomy and a lot more public consultation and participation. I imagine what we'll come out with at the end is that, you know, that we run the risk of being put into a ward with Rodney, a rural ward, which Great Barrier really don't want that. And I think there are some arguments about going with Rodney, which are the same arguments you'd apply to the Thames Coromandel proposal. You know, there's no sort of natural links there. So, you know, I think we'll probably be put into a CBD in Western Bays or another sort of area on the coast, just in terms of the population base. I take some heart from the fact that we've got our local boards, because they are the ones that the boards are going to be are having much more power, much more funding, and I think that's going to be where we will have our autonomy.
What sort of power will they have?
Well, the third bill will also be coming up in November, which will go into detail about the powers of the local boards. From what I understand from the reading around it, they're looking at boards having the power to have a dispute with their council, which, you know, was one of the things under the waste issue here on Waiheke that was quite contentious. You know, would the community board be able to take the council to task over decisions? And the legislation, as it's coming through in the bill, looks like we might have that ability. The other powers are around services. Services, bylaws, targeted rates. But, you know, the devil's in the detail. We've really got to wait till we see what's coming through. Mm. And then we have to submit on it. So the reason I'm setting up the meeting tomorrow is actually to start people thinking about all these things, because we're going to be hell of a busy again.
And when you say making submissions, is this for the third bill in November?
Yeah, so the time frame is the local government commission is determining the wards and the, you know, where the councillors stand, whether they're you know, multi-member wards, like, you know, three councillors for a large area or whatever. So they're determining that. They'll put out a proposal on the 20th of November. And then they're calling for submissions on that. They won't be hearing submissions, so it's just written submissions, until the 11th of December, and then they'll come back with a final determination in March. At the same time, in November, we've got the third bill coming out, which is about the powers of local boards, and that's there will be select committee hearings on that issue, as I understand.
Does that offer us a window of opportunity, even if it is only a fan light, to get our own ward councillor?
The third bill doesn't, because it's quite specific, and the government has said quite clearly that that's a decision for the local government commission. So it's really about how we lobby now and between November the 20th and December the 11th on what kind of impact we can have on the local government commission.
That's an interesting period, actually, that they've chosen, isn't it? Because everybody's gearing up for Christmas, and the last thing they're thinking about is doing submissions.
Absolutely. You know, that's I haven't found the whole process towards Super City terribly democratic anyway. And I think you cut down submission period times and you cut out public hearings, then you're starting to cut out a lot of democracy, which doesn't bode well for the super city. I mean, that's my personal criticism. I mean, we can manage it. But further down, I mean, what we're on is a train ride to the super city in October next year.
Mm. Yeah, it's a very short time frame.
Yeah. I may well be the last Harika Gulf Islands councillor, which is a bit of a scary thought, really.
Well, let's not hope that that happens.
Well, you know, I'm not holding out much hope for it, but I think if we are going to go for that, then we need to organise, and the time is now.
It is indeed, and positive thinking goes a long way. So do not go into the meeting tomorrow with negative thoughts.
No, that's right. And I mean, it's my role is to advocate for our community, so that's one of the reasons why I'm calling the meeting for tomorrow. And we'll set up some workshops from then on. We'll put out a time frame about, you know, how we make submissions and stuff like that. So, at the end of it, what I'm hoping is to have, like, an organising plan for the next part of the process.
And you'll have draft submissions for people to use as a template for their own submission?
Yeah, later on down the track when we get to that submission process. So, this is a very talented and vibrant community where people really care about local government. So this is about saying, okay, let's get ourselves organised so we can get better local government.
Right. And tomorrow's meeting is to talk about ways we can do that and ways that we can promote the idea of keeping our Gulf Islands councillor on the Auckland Super City Council.
Yes, and if it's not about that, it's about saying how do we leverage the most powers that we possibly can for representation.
Absolutely. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce Di from the library, and she's going to tell us how October Book Month is going.
Good morning, Jan.
Good morning, guys.
It's going incredibly well. We've got people coming in saying, I need to borrow that book that everybody's talking about. So, which is a plus for me because you organise these things and you hope people are going to buy into it and that your marketing and advertising's worked, but it seems it has. So, Sonata for Miriam, which is the book, you know, that everyone on the island's reading this month for our event called One Island, One Book, and it seems to have taken off really well. So, no, all
yes,
good in
indeed.
That department.
That's great. Yeah, well, I went in to take note on Tuesday and I bought the book, and I'm a pretty slow reader, really. And it's something that's really got to grip me to keep me going, and
yes.
I nearly finished this in one day.
Oh, my goodness, fantastic.
Almost, yes. Almost. But
yeah.
It's an interesting read. It's an interesting approach.
Yes. And so we've just, I'm finalising the discussion questions because the evening at Lazy Lounge, where it's like, you know, a one-off large book club for the night, which you don't have to book for, by the way. You just turn up and it's $12 at the door for a free glass of wine. Well, it won't be free, obviously. You're paying $12, but it includes a glass of wine or some whatever you drink, and each table will have a platter of nibbles, and then each table will also have a discussion question, and which, you know, to do with the book, and then the people at the table discuss that question, and of course it ends up to be a very bubbly, opinionated little chat, and then we're going to circulate, you know, like switch around and have different people at your table and a different question. So by the end of the night, you've probably discussed about, well, maybe 10 or 12 different questions that we've formulated for the night. So,
that's
yeah.
Great. And that's Thursday the 29th.
Yeah, at 7 o'clock.
At 7 o'clock.
Yeah, so looking forward to that. I think because of the amount of people that have, you know, borrowed it from the library and the amount of people that take note have sold to, because they've already sold out of their first lot of books and into their second lot from the publishers. So that's, there's lots of people reading this book, so that's really cool.
That's great.
And, of course, the Waiheke Radio, has been playing it every day, just the weekdays. So the book is, I hope people are, it'd be interesting to have feedback about how many people are listening to the daily reading of Sonata for Miriam via their local radio.
Yes, yeah. Indeed. They should give you, if you've heard the serialisation of Sonata for Miriam on Waiheke Radio, then pop into the library and let Di know.
And the other thing is, it is podcast, I understand now, so that if you've missed the first, you know, readings, then you can click into your radio station, which is Waiheke ahikiradio.org.nz, and yeah, listen to the past ones and catch yourself up, and then get into the daily reading just on the local radio if you can get it. So that's really cool. And the other thing is, I've been going upstairs to the gallery because it's the altered book exhibition starting on Monday afternoon, and some of the entries are fascinating and so different. So that's an exhibition with a difference for locals to pop up to the gallery and see all of next week. It's just on for a week, so make sure you go and see what people can do to old books.
Right. And is the library involved with the Waiheke Literary Festival?
No, but obviously it's complementary to us, so we're supporting each other in you know, because it's all to do with books and literature, and it's New Zealand Book Month, so that's, it's completely separate. But we've got the pamphlets at the library, and and they, you know, they've put their our event, One Island, One Book at Lazy Lounge, in their pamphlet as well. So yeah, we're just complementing each other, which is working out quite nicely. But it's not our project.
Okay. One thing I noted with Sonata for Miriam, when I bought it at Take Note, was that on the counter they had bookmarks with the front cover on. And I thought, what a neat idea.
Yes.
Whose initiative was that?
I'm working quite closely with the marketing department at Auckland City Libraries, and we, you know, we have our own people there. So the two people that are involved in that, in the communications and the graphics and whatnot, they've done, Shannon over there has done awesome bookmarks for us. And I think that girl is quite, whoever it is, you know, that's one of the discussion questions. Who is that on the front cover? Because is it Miriam? Is it Angela? Is it Cecilia? So, that will be, so it is a kind of, what a haunting sort of bookmark, and it's catching people's eyes, I think. So I've got them everywhere around the island, and, you know, Take Note's got them, and Lazy Lounge has got them, and just putting them out there and putting them all around the library, of course. And it's just a little reminder about the event. It's just sort of something you can hold for the event. And just go, oh, that's right, you know, Lazy Lounge, 29th,
exactly. Have any other communities in Auckland done this sort of thing? For book month?
I'm not sure. The Auckland City Library's a central site, has chosen the 10 p.m. question. Quite low key, I think, but you know, they've got the author coming in for an author chat at central. Some of the other sites, like the Ponsonby site and maybe the Greyland site, are slightly involved. But the New Zealand Book Month overall theme is to have, is for people in their communities to choose one book. So, like, you know, different communities all around New Zealand have chosen a book. It can be non-fiction or fiction, for the New Zealand Book Month read, and then they've got events around that. A lot of people have chosen cookbooks, and they've got people coming in, you know, doing demonstrations and that kind of thing. But we wanted one that was, oh, I don't know, we could have chosen anything, but we wanted it to have some connection to the island. So, which it had, I mean, you've read most of it, so it starts on the island.
I have finished it.
Oh, yeah, and it finishes on an island off Sweden, so it's got that whole, you know, there's many ways in which locals can connect to it.
Mm. Yeah. And I understand that the author, Linda Olsen, lived on Waiheke.
No, she didn't live here. No, she lives on the north. She lives in Auckland. I'm not sure where, and she is Swedish, obviously, and has lived here for many years.
It'd be great if we could get her over.
I wanted her to come to the event. We've been in email contact, and she's so, you know, delighted that we're doing this. And she can't be at the event because she would have absolutely happily been there, but she's up in the Scandinavian area and Europe promoting her books. Both of her books. The other one is Let Me Sing You Gentle Songs, which people might like to read. It's just, you know, quite similar energy, obviously, same author. And that's another one to read of hers.
Was that written before Sonata for
Miriam? Yeah, just before. And so she's up there doing that. But so I said, oh, can you post me down a signed book, you know, because, you know, to have as a prize on the night. And she said, oh, well, how about someone, you know, we meet for coffee and a chat and a signed book? And I said, oh, yes, please, that's even better. So when she gets back, which is early November, the prize will be given out in the night, but they'll meet her when she gets back from Europe.
Oh, that's great. Well,
yeah, so that's pretty cool.
If you can keep us in the loop there, we might be able to get her in for a chat.
Yes, yeah, if she comes over to the island for the coffee and chat, that would be a great idea, and we could nab her for a little chat on the radio, couldn't we? Even if we pre-record it. Mm. That would be great. Mm. Awesome.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So the other New Zealand Book Month thing I just had to slip in is the movie at the cinema, which is called Frank, which is about the author Frank Sargeson. So that's on Tuesday. Oh, it's on the 20th of October at 7 o'clock, I think.
So that'll be a Thursday.
Yeah, is it the 20th?
Oh, yeah, well, if the 27th is a Thursday, the 20th
No, it's the 29th is a Thursday.
Oh, the 29th,
I think it's a Tuesday.
Sorry. Yep, you're right.
Yeah, so I think it's a Tuesday at the cinema, so support that one as well. It's part of the overall picture of what we're celebrating on Waiheke.
Excellent.
Yeah, so
that's
yeah,
great.
All very busy.
Absolutely. And is there anything else happening over at the library?
We've just finished a phenomenally busy 2 weeks. It's been the school holidays, and I think helped by the weather, but also a really, really good holiday program. We've had, which has been really successful, with lots of children swamped in our little library. But we've had like over 700 people through the door. So that's huge numbers, which we're always excited about, of course, but it's pretty full on. And on Wednesday we had the last of our holiday program, and we had rocket balloons because we were doing space, you know, like aliens as one of our themes. And we had these farting rocket balloons all around the library making a huge noise. So the old, shh, don't be, you know, be quiet in the library, completely doesn't work. In a community library. No, it was very successful. So we've had lots of new members joining, which is always encouraging. You know, people that have been here for years or new people to the island. So, of course, we always want to encourage more of our community to join. So it's just been, you know, busy, 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 busy. And now shortly it'll be summer and the summer holidays, which for us, because of, you know, how many people come and stay here, we're also phenomenally busy. But, yeah, don't let that stop you coming in. We love it.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
No, very, very warm welcome whenever you go into the library there. Yeah. And very helpful people.
Yeah, we hope so.
So pop in and see Di and the rest of the staff in the library.
And pick up your Sonata for Miriam and join in with all of what everyone's talking about.
Yes, don't be left out of the conversation.
That's right.
Thank you, Donna.
So, thank you.
We'll catch up with you next month.
Lovely. Thanks,
okay.
Jan. Cheers.
Bye.
Kia ora.
You're listening to Island Life, Waiheke people, events and issues. Brought to you by Island, art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Ocean View Road, Onirua.
Now it's my pleasure to introduce Geraldine O'Sullivan Beer, who is involved with Words on a Small Island, the Waiheke Literary Festival. Welcome, Geraldine.
Hello, Jan, and listeners.
Yes. Now, tell us something about the festival. How did it come into being?
Well, I guess like all things, it starts with a dream. And I've been in publishing and writing all of my career. And I saw that on the island we've got food festivals, wine festivals, wonderful music, fabulous theatre and drama. And one thing I thought was missing was the gap where in the writing, we've got very many talented and creative people who write on the island in all various forms, from poets through to fiction now. And I thought that the book festival might be something which would be add to the life on the island.
So you're intending to make this an annual event?
Yes, very much, definitely.
Excellent. And it'll be the last weekend of the month, isn't it? 29th,
it's actually not 30th. A weekend. It's actually Thursday. It's called Words on a Small Island, the Waiheke Literary Festival. It's on Thursday the 29th and Friday the 30th of October, which is just straight after Labour weekend.
And what format will it take? What activities will there be on those 2 days?
There are two days of inspiring talks and conversations with writers. There's meet for the serious book lover, and there's also a glam event up at Mudbrook, which we have three outstanding writers will be participating. So over lunch at Mudbrook on Thursday the 29th, you can enjoy hearing about from Roger Hall. Roger Hall is one of our leading playwrights, and as you might know, a lot of his plays now go overseas. We also at the lunch, sort of like the second course, is Lorraine Jacobs, who's such a renowned food writer and very inspiring in New Zealand. Her new book, which she's edited, is called A Treasury of New Zealand Baking, which is just coming out. She has many of her own well-thumbed recipe books, but Lorraine is cuisine food editor, and this particular book she is actually editor, and it's a lot of baking recipes from lots of chefs and cooks all over the country, and the proceeds from that, or the royalties, will go to the Breast Cancer Foundation. And then the final course of that lunch is Jeremy Hansen, who and Patrick Reynolds, a renowned architectural photographer, and they're going to take us on a journey through our most loved architectural style, the villa, in their new book, which is just coming out. It's actually called Villa, From Heritage to Contemporary. I know that we have a few villas on the island. I think most of them have been relocated here.
So how do you get tickets for that event?
Please go to the Waiheke Community Art Gallery. They have the tickets. It's best to book a full day. We are not selling per session at this stage. It's actually full day activities. But on Thursday you can book for just the morning for $25 or the full day, which is $100, which includes the morning sessions plus the wonderful lunch up at Mudbrick. The Friday, which is all going to be at Artworks, is $50 for the day.
And what time does the Thursday session finish? Is it finishes late afternoon or goes into the evening?
No, it's a daytime act. The festival is during the day. It starts off on Thursday and Friday. Both days we open with coffee in the courtyard here. Our lovely island coffee will be here, and you can come and mix and mingle, and we'll have book stalls with people can meet their friends, have a coffee, look at books. And as it's a small festival, it's not like the AIT Centre, it's more likely that you'll be mixing and mingling with lots of the authors and writers, especially some that have come from all around the country. And then we go on, and Tanya Batt is the first. She talks an enchanting tale for adults, which opens the festival. She does one on Thursday to open the festival and another at lunchtime on the Friday.
Yes, we've got Tanya coming in about half an hour to talk about what she's doing for the festival. It just occurred to me that on that Thursday, if you're a real literary aficionado, you could really get a total dose by finishing off the day down at Lazy Lounge and talking about Sonata for Miriam.
That's it. So it is New Zealand Book Month, and so I guess this is definitely part of New Zealand Book Month, and all of the books being talked about are New Zealand books. There are, of course, a great dose of Waiheke writers, which we're thrilled about, of course. We don't want to have all the treasures this year. We'll save a few for next year, but we've certainly got new book from Janet Hunt, which a lot of people have been looking through, her wonderful book called E3 Call Home. She's probably been on here too. Has she on the radio? Yes.
Not on
yet.
My show yet.
Oh, yes. She'll be in line. And also we have a new writer, a fiction writer, Dorothy Fowler, who's a first-time fiction writer, which is really fascinating. And she has a book set in Northland called What Remains Behind, and it's a compelling story of murder, love and lust, and archaeology. And so that starts off Friday. And then following her, Carol Bowe from the Women's Bookshop in Ponsonby is coming through and will tell us about lots of the quality fiction she has in mind that might be interesting for you to read over the summer in your deck chair. And she's bringing with her one of her hidden gems. She said she will uncover the hidden gems for the bookshelf. And one of her hidden gems is Alexa Johnson with her lovely food book called A Second Helping. She came out last year with one called Ladies a Plate. So they're comments on our social life rather than just food.
Right. I'm talking to Geraldine O'Sullivan Beer, who's the organiser of Words on a Small Island, the Waiheke Literary Festival, which will take place on the 29th and 30th of October. Geraldine, you mentioned Janet Hunt a few moments ago. I understand that she designed the logo for the festival.
She did, and I hope you're going to see some of it about. There are a few appearing in advertisements, and the pamphlet programme for the for the festival is going to be available at the library, at the cafes, and in the art gallery. So just pop in and quickly pick one up in our bookstores roundabout, and you'll see this delightful logo on the front, which has been designed by Janet. It's actually a dog on a boat, and Janet, many years ago, was looking at a very early medieval manuscript called the Das Apocalypse, which is actually from the 12th century, and in it was a little Viking boat in the margin of this illuminated manuscript, and this Viking boat had a little dog on it, and it persuaded Janet that we would have a boat and a dog sailing off to Waiheke with a load of books, and it's quite applicable. You know, Waiheke is often thought of as a dog shape. So there is lots of connotations. And books take you on a bit of a journey themselves. So there's lots of connotations. So Janet's done a great job of this charming logo, or the graphic on the front of the pamphlet. So do pick one up.
A dog's tail.
It could be a dog's tail.
Oh, that's great fun. It is great fun. These brochures are around widely on the island at various cafes, at the art gallery, at the library, and
bookshops.
It tells you in the bookshops. Yes, tells you everything you need to know about the
program
for Words on a Small Island, the Waiheke Literary Festival, which is happening on the 29th and the 30th of October, and we are very sure that it will become an annual event. It'll be a very popular annual event. It's something to for everybody to keep in their annual calendars and look out for next year. So thank you very much, Geraldine, for coming in. Good luck with the festival.
Thank you, Jan. And if there's anything you want to know, do call into the gallery and they'll have some of the answers for you about the festival.
Thank you.
Look forward to seeing you there.
Thank you very much. Now it's my pleasure to introduce Sally Lumsden. And Sally's involved with the Surfdale Community Garden, is it? The Blackpool Community Garden, my apologies. There's a very big difference between Surfdale and Blackpool. Welcome, Sally.
Ah, good morning, Jan.
Yes. Tell us something about how your the garden started at Blackpool.
About a year ago now, a group of very energetic volunteers built the garden. It's a very long, narrow garden on the old Blackpool school property. The frame is built from builders mix and cement using frames, and it was a very big task. It took probably 2 weekends.
Wow, and that was all voluntary labour?
It was all voluntary labour, probably about 10 or 12 people.
Okay, and whereabouts do you get your plants from?
Mostly those of us who are involved grow the plants from seedlings and donate them to the garden. Now we have a small fund that we can use if we need to buy plants too.
Well, that's great. And you've been going for 2 years?
No, just 1 year. October last year we built the garden.
Mm. Excellent. And what have you got growing at the moment?
Just now we've got a few brassicas, and we have quite a good herb garden section. We've got a new section, that's the Blackpool Playgroup Children's Garden, which is doing very well. And we've got one rather large area at the moment is planted in lupin, because you need to regenerate the soil after you've had a crop in.
Right, yeah. And the children's garden, what are they growing?
They've got snow peas and coloured lettuces and beans and a chia plant, some red silver beet and tomatoes.
Pardon my ignorance, but what is an achia?
Achia is a new plant. It's supposedly the latest sort of health plant. And you actually use the seeds from the plant. When you harvest in autumn, the seeds can be used for salads or in your muesli or practically anywhere, it seems.
Have you tried them?
No, I haven't. No, they're very new. This, mm-hmm. In fact, this season is the first time I've heard of them.
Right. Okay. And what do you do with your crop? Do you sell it or?
Some of our produce goes to the grow stall at the market, and helps to fund the development of the garden and other community gardens. And some of it we give to the Waiheke Budget Advisory Service to give to people who need it. And some are shared by the people who work in the garden.
Mm, that sounds great. How big an area have you got? Is it a large garden?
It's probably about 20 metres long by maybe 2 metres wide. It's a very long, narrow garden.
Mm. And is that on council property?
It is on council property, and the builder's mix and cement was provided by the council.
Oh, that's good.
So they certainly help us with the finances.
Excellent. Mm. That's great. Are you in contact with other community gardens on the island?
Yes, we are. There's quite a lot of movement between the gardens. We usually support each other, and we've certainly attended the open days at Surfdale last week, and Ostend will be next week, and those people will come to ours tomorrow.
Right. Great. Do you have lots of volunteers turn up?
We don't, but we're hoping we will get some new volunteers tomorrow.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yes. We've probably got about 4 regulars on our garden at present, and ideally we'd have perhaps 10 or 12. Mm. Right. Since we started the children's garden, some of the parents from that are already showing a lot of interest.
That's so a great idea. Do you have somebody who teaches the children how to go about it and what's needed?
We're involved in that role. Each most playgroup days on Thursday, we pop over and look at the plants with the children and plant some more and talk about what's growing and how it's growing
and mulching and things like
mm-hmm,
that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, last week were very busy putting all the cut grass from the park around the plants to keep the moisture in.
What are their favourite plants?
I think it's probably going to be the tomatoes and the strawberries.
Right, right. Yeah, I guess they like something that's fairly quick growing.
They do. Yep. They do, yes.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I mean, the weather we've had lately has probably set back things a bit, has it? Has it upset the balance of things?
I think things have got a pretty good start, to be quite honest. Yes, it's been cold, but things seem to have got away quite well.
So they were quite well established before we got that cold set?
Only very recently.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Right. So tomorrow, what time are you starting?
So tomorrow we're starting at 10, and Ken Clark's doing a square foot gardening demonstration for us to show people how they can develop a small productive garden in their own backyard, and we'll have balloons and things because it's our first birthday, and tea and coffee, and people can look at the garden, look at the photo display of the children building the garden, and yeah.
And of course it's open to all. You don't have to live in Blackpool.
You don't at all.
No.
Anybody's welcome.
That's great. Oh, well, we wish you every success, and let's hope the weather plays ball.
We hope so too.
Right.
Thanks,
Jenny. And now we're going to talk to Cathy Carroll. Cathy is involved in organising the bring and buy at the St Peter's Catholic Church in Oneroa tomorrow for the people affected by the Samoan and Philippine tsunamis. Welcome, Cathy.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me.
A pleasure. Now, what's your involvement? How did you get involved in this?
Well, I have to confess, in good Catholic fashion, I instigated the idea. I couldn't bear watching the news night after night and seeing millions of thousands of people in Manila floating on a bit of corrugated iron, and the people in Samoa, the headlines with a man losing 13 members of his family and another young mother losing 3 children before her eyes. And I don't think any of us on the island, we were all grieving for them, because it is one island empathising with another. And I just don't think we could sit still and do nothing. I work for the Combined Churches on Waiheke, which means that instead of bickering and sorting out our differences, we actually work together. And apparently on Waiheke, we have a reputation for doing this better than anywhere else in New Zealand. And so the Anglicans, Presbyterians, Baptists, Quakers, some Buddhists, some AOG, Catholics, everybody is working together, and that's flown out from that church inspiration to the wider island. And I know, I feel, but I suppose everybody who lives here feels Waiheke is very special, and we've come here, we seem to end up here for a reason. And so this movement has emanated out, and there are people all over the island who just want to give. They can empathise, and I think my son's young partner said something very beautiful to me last night. I was worrying and getting nervous about what I'd say today. And she said the thing that moved her most was seeing an interview with, I think, the head, I don't know whether it's a prime minister, president, this is my ignorance speaking, of Samoa, saying that the hardest thing, he had tears in his eyes, he said the hardest thing is that in the past, until now, until this last week or two, Samoan people have looked out to the sea as we Waihekians do, and they've always found it a source of calm, peace, beauty and inspiration, as we find Waiheke environmentally beautiful. But now the Samoan people are grieving and crying because they can no longer look to the sea. They just feel fear and terror and horror and shock. And I suppose that's like our lives at times. You know, our lives can be frightening and upsetting, so yeah, we're empathising.
Absolutely, and I guess being an island community ourselves, we can empathise with Samoa there, but for fortune,
yes,
maybe.
Yes.
Now, if people are interested in bringing along goods and things, what sort of goods are you looking for?
Anything that you think would be able to be sold, because our first priority is to try to sell things. On the island tomorrow, people are saying to me, I want to give you books, but they're really good books. I don't want them sold for less than $5. I've had people from Church Bay donating $100, $1,000 clothes and items. And so we don't want to give things away, but we want everything sold so that we can send the money directly. We're taking no administration costs. So anything you could stand on the lawn with a little bit of a sheet underneath and bring things that you could sell, contribute the money, anything you'd like to buy, raffle tickets. We've had wonderful raffle tickets donated with Fuller's and Dunleavy's wines and olive oils and things. So anything you think that you'd like to buy or sell or get rid of from your house, but no rubbish, please, because then we have to pay rubbish dump fees.
Well, I guess that if what isn't sold, you take away with you at the end of the day.
Not necessarily. We're working in conjunction with a wonderful Fijian woman, Serafina Hall, who's taking things from now for the next 2 weeks to the bowling club. So what is good and is not sold, we're going to contribute directly to her, and somehow, by the grace of God, she's going to get it shipped over to Auckland and then to Samoa and Tonga, which has also been hit. And so as long as it's good stuff, we've been donated a huge cask of nails and things that we will try to get shipped over.
Now, how are you going to get the money over to the right people?
We're going directly through the Catholic Aid Agency, Caritas, which is making a direct appeal for people in Samoa and the Philippines, and this is taking absolutely no administration off the top. So I put my life on the line that it will be honestly distributed, not just to Christian people, but to Samoans directly. It's from one island to another.
That's great. Now, what time do we start tomorrow?
We start at 10:30 on the lawn outside the Catholic Church, and it will go on until hopefully two, maybe three, if enough people turn up and we make it an island empathetic gesture. We'll go as long as you can keep giving.
Right. Now, what happens if it's a, if the weather's not cooperative?
If the weather's, if it's raining as it has been, we're going to hold it off for the following Sunday and store as much as we can in the garage at the church. So if it is raining and you're bringing things tomorrow, please hold back for one more week and we'll hold it the following Sunday.
That's brilliant. Well, thank you very much for your initiative. And I think, Kathy, that's a, you know, that's a great thing to do. And just looking at the Gulf News this week, there's a few other people who have, who are doing similar things for the cause, and that's all to the good.
It's fantastic.
That's great. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Another person doing their bit for the tsunami relief is Tanya Batt, our wonderful storyteller. She'll be doing her her story at the Artworks at 2 p.m. this afternoon, and we invite you to come along. And she's right here with me now. Welcome, Tanya.
Good morning, Jan.
Right. So, how did you get into this?
Well, for the last couple of weeks, we've had the school holiday program running at the Story Centre, and most days started off with conversations amongst the children about what they'd heard and seen in the newspapers, heard on the news about the earthquakes, the tsunami, the typhoons. And a conversation with Susie Newborn at the markets, who works with Oxfam, and saying, oh, could go up and tell some stories in Samoa. Not quite possible just at this moment, but we can tell stories here on our island, and I thought it would be a great way for the children to be able to contribute and to participate in the relief efforts.
Yes, indeed, and you're doing this at the Story Centre.
That's right.
And it's attendance by donation.
That's right. Yeah. And this will be our first public event since gaining our trust status, which we officially received from the Charities Commission a few days ago.
Oh, brilliant. Yes. That is so good.
Yes.
Yes. So now we can be sure that you'll stay with us.
Hope. I try not to think about it too much as an anchor, but rather as a buoyancy.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. So what sort of stories will you be telling this afternoon?
Well, I'm aware that a lot of the focus has been for the families in Samoa, but I certainly, my attention was caught by an article in the newspaper which highlighted the fact that in the last 10 days we've had earthquakes, we've had typhoons, we've had tsunamis. So we're looking to tell stories from all those different countries, from Indonesia, which had a very bad earthquake, and the Philippines, who've suffered from a very strong typhoon, and from Samoa and Tonga as well.
Okay, so you've got stories already.
Yes, stories I've previously prepared at home.
Oh,
well, I've actually put them all together, especially for this event.
That's great.
So I had a bit of late night swatting last night.
Good on you. Good on you. Thank goodness for the internet.
That's right.
And you're hoping to get some children along, and as well as adults, there'll be something for everybody.
Yes, you're never too old, never too young for stories in my book, so it's open to all ages, and we hope that you'll come along, and all proceeds, as I said before, will go towards Oxfam, who work to help.
Right, yes, because there is, as I said earlier, there's an Oxfam box, I think, down at the fruit and veg shop. So that's very, very useful. And that's great. Absolutely wonderful, Tony, that you're doing this. So, for goodness sake, this afternoon, the weather is miserable. It's no good to going for a walk on the beach or in the bush. Come to Artworks, to the Story Centre, and keep dry and warm and have fun and donate towards a really good cause. It's Tanya Batt at the Story Centre at 2 o'clock this afternoon by donation. And all the proceeds are going to Oxfam to help the families affected by the recent tsunamis. So thank you, Tanya. We won't work your voice any more than we absolutely have to.
Thank you very much, Jan.
Okay, thanks for coming in.
You've been listening to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life, our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. Island Life is brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, and the interviews are replayed on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock. They're also available as a download from our website, www.waihekeradio.org.nz. Island Life is brought to you by Island, the shop with Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Island, Ocean View Road, Onirola.